We're about to go to Chocolate City.
Let's get it!
The capital of the United States.
Woo! You know, haters are haters, you know. They control the mouth.
Merry Christmas, little man!
Commitment to fucking playing defense.
I'm not eating cat food either.
What's this all about? We're on the kiss cam. I feel a little reluctant to take that.
How sweet.
That thing was really strong.
Look out, Nene and Butler butting heads, looking at each other.
Broadcasting from the capital of the free world, this is Zardcast.
Welcome to Zardcast. I'm your host, CT Schwenk. Thank you for joining us. March 1st, 2017, at Zardcast on Twitter. That's where you can find us. Throughout the games and such, subscribe on iTunes, Overcast, Google Play, Acast, Blog Talk Radio. We're all out on those platforms as a part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, the A-Team, your Wizards podcast for that. Go check out almightyballer.com. Tons and tons of other shows just like us. Things are really getting rolling over there. I would recommend you you check it out if you have yet to already. Got a lot to discuss tonight. We are back from our own All-Star break. I know I promised to do a show last week, but laziness is really the what I came down with last week. So we pressed pause. Now we're back. And we got a fully packed show for you guys tonight. And a different venue this evening, too. Gary, we're in your apartment. How are you, sir?
I'm good. It feels nice to do this under my own blanket and on my couch. It's nice. If this was our All-Star break we just did, which of us did the three-point contest, which of us did the skills challenge, and which of us was the dunker?
Threw a curveball at me. I'd say I'm the skills guy. That's, you know, I'll take that mantle. Dave, also sitting here with us.
Whew, that's a good one. I'm going to take the three-point, and I think you got to be the dunker.
All right.
You bring the laughs, you know, hammer it down. So we're going to be here for, I mean, you guys will be here collectively 3 weeks. We're going to do this week here. Next week, it's just you guys doing
that
the pod.
That will be an experience for everyone.
I'm going to Japan, so I'm leaving all my stuff here. I'm going to show you guys how everything works. You guys are going to record your own episode, and I'll do the posting from the other side of the world. And then I guess I'll come back here to get my stuff and we can pod here again. So makes it easy for you. You can stay under that blanket for 3 weeks straight if you want to.
I'm just going to leave all the recording equipment on when you leave and record 3 weeks of my life and then just upload it as one giant Zardcast episode.
That sounds good.
Do you pay your power bill or is that covering the rent?
I do pay it, but I split it with the people upstairs, so they might see a bump.
Okay.
All right. Well, don't let them know. Definitely don't let them know. So joining us tonight, first off the bat here, we've got a guest on the line. His name, Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle, covers the Golden State Warriors, beat writer over there. Connor's my pal. How you doing, buddy? Good to have you on.
I'm good, man. Good to reconnect. I appreciate you reaching out.
Yeah, it's been a while. So you took over this beat job here. And I mean, as soon as it happened, I was like, oh man, we got to get Connor on whenever the Wiz play the Warriors. When did you, so you were out covering Cal Athletics, and then you got this new position covering the Warriors right before, right around the Kevin Durant signing? When did you hop on the beat?
I officially started mid-September, like two weeks before training camp, so about 2 months after Durant signed with Golden State.
Damn, so you were thrust right into it.
Yeah, literally, just kind of an interesting experience, having minimal experience covering the NBA, my first NBA beat to be this one, but it's been a joy. I mean, it's been an amazing experience so far. I've fully enjoyed it, so it's been great.
So you've been at all the home games. Have you been following him around on the road as well?
I'm at every single game, every single practice, every single shoot-around, every road trip. Haven't missed a game yet. I'm still in D.C. actually, leave at 6 a.m. for Chicago to get there for shoot around tomorrow morning. Got a game in Chicago, and then it's on to New York, and then on to Atlanta. So we're in the middle of the craziest road stretch of the season.
Nice.
That sounds exhausting.
It is. It definitely is. But it's also a lot of fun.
So what's this been like? You know, DC. I didn't go to the game, but it seemed kind of like a circus. Has it been kind of like a traveling circus going around all these cities? And, you know, well, I didn't know there were so many Golden State fans in D.C. last night, but I'm sure that has happened to every single place the Warriors have gone.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, certain places more than others, but there has been a palpable buzz in every road arena. And a lot of Steph Curry jerseys, a lot of Durant Warriors jerseys. And the thing I've noticed is it's been especially Warriors heavy in Eastern Conference arenas. Like you mentioned last night, there were a ton of Golden State jerseys. I think it's just because that's the only time for those fans to see the phenomenon that is this team. So they really come out in droves. But they've sold out almost every single road game this season, and huge lines outside the arena. I know a lot of times, you know, they'll get into opposing cities at 2 or 3 in the morning. They'll pull up to their hotel and they'll have literally hundreds of people waiting at their hotel at 2 in the morning. I mean, these guys are treated like rock stars. It's kind of insane.
That's a pretty wild spectacle there.
Since you're traveling with them, and obviously not a part of the team, but part of the traveling group, do you get any of that rock star treatment? Does anybody think that you're like part of somebody's crew or something?
So I don't literally travel with them. I don't go on a flight or anything, you know, cause that would be a conflict of interest. What I do is I follow them on commercial flights from city to city, staying, you know, the nearest Marriott to wherever they're at. But I do kind of get a sense of how crazy it is, because a lot of times I'll stop by their team hotel to do interviews and I'm around them quite a bit. So I've definitely picked up on the insanity that they have to deal with. And no, I think people realize that I'm not Steph Curry. I am not Kevin Durant. I'm just a reporter hanging around the team. So I have not gotten any of those types of requests or anything.
Are you going to try as hard as you can to just get like a night out on the town with Matt Barnes and Draymond Green together?
Oh man, that would be fascinating, wouldn't it? No, I try not to go out early. I try to draw that line in the sand, right? Where, you know, you want to have a good relationship with the guys, but I'm not going out and partying with these guys. So, but that would be pretty interesting, I think.
Wait, so you're telling me you don't hang out at the same clubs that Draymond Green does or Matt Barnes potentially did? That's weird.
I would be lying if I didn't say that I've seen them out on the road before, but I don't purposely go to the same venues as them. No.
So you're chatting with these guys every day. Who is like the chattiest guy in the locker room? Who do you know? Like, oh man, I can go to him and get a quote. Because I mean, you're around, you know, 3-4 Hall of Famers, essentially. I mean, they're, you know, obviously they're still playing, but I mean,
right.
Are there a lot of ego bandied about?
I mean, like, I would be surprised if Clay and Draymond didn't make the cut someday. Right. Assuming, you know, they don't suffer career ending injuries soon. But no, obviously Draymond is a talker. And whenever I'm in need of a quote, if I'm struggling to find something to write, you know, you go to Draymond because he always has something colorful to say, always has an opinion, always has a hot take. So Draymond's great. I have really good relationships with Sean Livingston, David West, Zaza Pachulia. Those guys are really thoughtful, introspective guys who are pretty candid in any type of interview setting. But really, the good thing about this team is there's no bad guys. I mean, all these guys are pretty quality guys who are pretty media friendly, who get what our job is. And it's a pretty easy environment as a reporter to walk into. They make our jobs pretty easy.
What's it like with, you know, talking to Steve Kerr? He used to be a media member. He would always show up on the Bill Simmons podcast. I loved him on there. I think he did a spot on there recently, but I feel like he's also another, probably the most thoughtful coach, maybe him and Pop, in the NBA.
I cannot tell you how many stories I've written this season just about him going off on, you know, legalization of marijuana, you know, the Muslim ban, traveling calls. You know, if he's well read on a subject and cares about it, he'll give you a really thoughtful answer and is not shy about going all in. He recognizes that he has a certain platform and he's not afraid to use it. In fact, he thinks he has a duty to use it. So he's great to cover from that perspective. He's got a phenomenal perspective on life. And obviously, you know, he's been through a lot in his life and he's not your typical NBA coach. He's not all about basketball. He watches CNN every night, reads the New York Times, has a really good perspective on things.
So you're in town, or you are still in DC. You went to the game of the phone booth, obviously Kevin Durant's homecoming game. He got booed pretty decently at the start of it, but he didn't really stick around too long because he hurt his knee. And we came out this afternoon that it sounds like he's got a grade 2 sprain on his MCL and a tibia bruise, and he's going to be out for, I mean, how long is he going to be out for? What's the latest you're hearing?
Yeah, he'll be out at least 4 weeks. That's kind of the conservative prognosis. He could be, or he could really be out anywhere between 4 and 8 weeks. They're going to look at him again, evaluate him in 4 weeks. I talked to an expert, a knee doctor today, and he said that because he has the bone bruise on top of the sprain, that could slow the rehab process a little bit. So it could be closer to 8 weeks. Right now, the Warriors are still pretty hopeful that he'll return before the regular season ends, and the regular season's about 6 weeks left, has about 6 weeks left, 22 games left. So they're pretty confident right now that he'll be good to go by playoff time. I think worst case scenario, he misses some games in the first round, which with this team would not be the end of the world, given the state of that 8 seed in the Western Conference. So I think they're going to be in okay shape. Today's news, even though he is out a while, was kind of a best case scenario when you're talking about knees, because he could have been ACL. He could have been out months. He could be missing the playoffs entirely. So the fact that they know they're going to get him when it matters most in the playoffs is a big sigh of relief for them.
Is Matt Barnes going to start?
You know, there's an outside chance. I've heard a couple people speculate about that. I personally don't think he'll start right away. We'll talk to Steve about that tomorrow, but I personally don't expect him to. It's kind of a lot to ask for a guy who hasn't been with your team at all to come in and start day one. Knowing Steve, knowing like what he likes to do with that rotation, I would expect him to start Patrick McCaw with Sean Livingston and Klay Thompson, start three guards. He does that because he likes to keep his second unit completely intact with Iguodala. Did I say Sean Livingston? It's Steph Curry.
I was going to say that is interesting.
Yeah, sorry. I was thinking Sean Livingston because I was thinking the second unit. But Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala and all those guys. So he's done that. The only other game that Durant missed the season last week, actually, that's what he did. So it wouldn't surprise me if that's what he ended up doing, at least at first.
I mean, people can't be that panicked about it, right? I mean, they lost the Wizards last night, but I mean, this is still essentially the same team that went to the finals and had a two game lead over the Cavaliers. Like it's like they have an embarrassment of riches, right? Like it's not. I mean, what's your vibe? I guess what you're hearing from people online and you know, just amongst the fans, are people worried or not so much?
I don't think so. I think people are just happy that he's going to be coming back in the playoffs, hopefully for the entire playoffs. So definitely in the games that matter the most. This is a team. There's probably never been a team in NBA history that is better equipped to withstand an injury to a player of Durant's caliber. Obviously, as we talked about earlier, they have probably three other future Hall of Famers, three other guys who are top 20 players in the league. They also have pretty good depth, one of the better benches in the league, in my opinion. And they have guys that, can shoulder the load. I think what they're going to miss most from Durant is actually the defensive end, because Durant has really settled in nicely as a rim protector for them this season. Without Andrew Bogut, without Festus Ezeli, he's leading them in blocks. He's you know, protecting that rim in a way that you don't see from a lot of guys who play that small forward position. He's, in my opinion, played at an all defensive team level, and so that's what I'm most interested to see is how does that affect their interior defense. I think offensively they're going to be okay because they have two of the other best scorers in the league. And Andre Iguodala and Livingston and those guys can shoulder heavy loads with no problem. So that's what I'm most interested to see. But if you look at the standings right now, they're four games up on San Antonio for the number one seed. San Antonio is really the only team within striking distance. And looking at their schedules, it's pretty favorable for the Warriors. Less than half of the games they have left are against winning teams. So I don't see them losing enough games to squander that four game cushion.
They've got two in San Antonio though, right? Or at least against them.
Yeah, they do. They do. First one being next week. So those will be big.
Didn't think it would be, I guess we'd even have a race at this point, but Spurs still in it.
And then they got to play the Wizards again.
In order.
Yeah, I was impressed by the Wizards, honestly, last night. I know they're good at home.
Speak on
But they really seized on that emotional blow that was Durant going down in that opening minute and just, you know, feasted, racing to that 19-point lead. And then the way they were able to holding off the Warriors when the Warriors are clicking on all cylinders is not an easy thing. So I was impressed how they were able to stand strong down the stretch last night.
Yeah. I was kind of wondering, I'm glad you spoke to that. If it was, I mean, it seemed like a game the Warriors could have, you know, easily won, but you know, just they were kind of sloppy. They were missing shots. Steph was off, but you think it was, you know, they were taken aback by that injury by KD early on. It just kind of shook them the rest of the night a little bit.
Oh, definitely. I mean, they were completely out of sorts for, you know, a good 9-minute stretch there. You know, not only is Durant this team's most consistent player, but he's become a real leader on this team. He's a guy that they respect an immense amount, and he's a guy the entire offense is kind of predicated on in a lot of ways. I mean, even though they have a really balanced attack, they kind of work off him. You know, Curry specifically kind of fashions his game around what Durant is doing day in and day out. So I think it was a difficult adjustment for them to lose him in the manner, I should say, that they lost him and so early in the game like that. So it took them a while. I knew that they were going to come out firing in that second half. I knew that they were going to get it together because this is a team who lives off the third quarter. If you look at their numbers in the third quarter this season, it's been phenomenal. So it didn't shock me at all that they made it a game and took the lead back early in that third quarter. But, you know, they just weren't able to hold on.
You talked about Durant as a guy that's like a leader in the locker room. Guys respect him a lot, especially when he went down, but pretty much since he made his decision, he's been getting so much sort of invective thrown at him from people on Twitter or wherever. The other guys on the Warriors don't really seem bothered by that kind of thing. Do you think that stuff gets to KD? Do you think that bothers him?
I think it did at first. I think it was a tough summer for him after he made that announcement. You know, his first couple months preseason through, you know, that first game against Oklahoma City, which was, I think, like fifth game of the season. I think that was a tough period for him because he's a guy who's always been the nice guy, right? He's a guy who's always been in the news for his charity work, for visiting tornado victims, for helping lift the city of Oklahoma City, for just being a genuinely good guy to root for. And I think it was tough for him to know that so many people suddenly hated him and so many people looked at him in a negative light, because he, at his core, he's a very sensitive person and he's someone who really wants to be liked. So I think that was really tough on him. You saw that, especially leading up to that first Oklahoma City game. There were a couple times on the road where you saw him kind of open up a little bit and talk about how difficult that was for him. But over time, I think he kind of got more comfortable with his new teammates, his new environment, and just kind of learned how to shield that a little bit.
ESPN just aired a commercial that I just wanted to get your quick opinion on. Do you think Klay Thompson really chugs chocolate milk while he practices the jump shot?
He actually does. Yeah. He loves chocolate milk. He's talked about it. Chocolate milk's a great, you know, way to kind of recover from workouts. So I know a lot of trainers actually recommend it to people, and Klay is one of its biggest fans. I think the reason he has that sponsorship deal is because he was quoted randomly one day talking about how much he loved chocolate milk. So it wasn't like, you know, he went out and sought that. I think just the people who have that company saw that quote and were smart enough to seize on that. So that is real. He's a guy who sponsors what he believes in.
That's good. Good to be true to your products.
This Warriors team is just the most covered team in the NBA. I mean, you probably see national folks parachuting in all the time. What's something that, like, you see every day, you know, you're there for every shoot around that, you know, even that people might not know, even the guys who parachute in, what's something, you know, a little off kilter that you notice that other people don't really get to see?
That's a tough one. I mean, I guess the overall thing that just sticks out to me is, there's a lot of hype around this team. Obviously there's a lot of made about how this is a circus, and don't get me wrong, at times it definitely is. Oklahoma City a few weeks ago was crazy. You know, the first week or so was pretty crazy. But the day in and day out isn't necessarily as crazy as you would think it is. There's only two beat writers, myself included, that are at every road game. You know, a midweek game in Denver isn't necessarily as nuts as you would think. There's only a few people there typically to cover the Warriors, and, you know, the visiting media might even be bigger. So I'm not sure if that fully answers your question, but that's one thing that when I'm talking to people are a little surprised about. I think the guys at this point are kind of immune to it. I don't think they even notice that much, because everything they went through last year with the chase for 73, that was so crazy that it's hard to top that. So even when they have those spectacle type games, it's kind of old hat for them.
Yeah, it's weird to see a team that, you know, could win, you know, in excess of 65 games, and, you know, it seems like it's an under the radar season for them, and they're still, you know, number one in the West.
And the thing that is different about this season as opposed to last season is that they really do not care about the regular season, to be honest. I mean, yes, they want to win the number one seed, and they want to have home court advantage through the playoffs, but they also have a keen awareness of the fact that they need to be energized and ready for the playoffs. Last season, they really peaked at the start of the season when they went on that crazy winning streak and then, you know, kind of kept it up through most of that regular season. And then you saw them kind of wear down toward the end of the regular season and into the playoffs and obviously collapse in the finals. And they're smart enough to realize that there's a correlation between their issues in the playoffs and going hard every single night in the regular season. This season, they definitely do coast at times. And, you know, Kerr is very careful about giving guys nights off and resting guys in certain moments because he doesn't really care about the regular season as much as the playoffs. And there's been a lot of losses this season where the general consensus has just been like, who cares? It's a regular season. You know, you don't hear that a lot from teams, but that's how they approach it.
You get to talk to a lot of NBA players, so maybe you can settle this once for all. Flat Earth or round Earth?
What?
Is the Earth flat,
flat
or round?
Earth or rounder? yeah, I'm going to have to go round Earth.
That University of Maryland education right there. Great
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I went to the great state school that is the University of Maryland. Actually went back there last night, believe it or not. Did some reminiscing. It was great.
Oh, man.
No, I got to go with round Earth. I find it kind of funny that sometimes I wonder if they're just messing with us. I don't think Kyrie is. I think he genuinely thinks that there's a flat Earth. But all the guys who chimed in after, I think were just like wanted to join the party. You know, I'm not sure that's totally real.
I think they were, at least his teammates were trying to make like him not look so silly maybe. Because I listened to the podcast where he initially was saying all that stuff and he seems to be fully in on it.
No, he definitely is. And I've heard, I mean, there's a lot of other examples of crazy theories he has. And, you know, that's not like a total aberration for him to think that if you know who he is as a person. So, yeah, he's an interesting guy.
Well, now he's got Andrew Bogut as a teammate so they can go investigate Pizzagate together.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very curious if the Cavs face the Warriors in the finals, how it'll be seeing Bogut on that other side, because Bogut had such an interesting dynamic with this team when he was here. He's always been kind of a loner, and I know he really didn't get along with Mark Jackson, but at the same time, I think he appreciated his time at Golden State. So it'll be interesting to see what that would be like.
What's your favorite road NBA city to visit so far? It's your first year out spreading your wings across the country.
Yeah, you know, I've enjoyed a lot of them. I fully enjoyed, I'm not going to lie, I totally enjoyed All-Star Weekend in New Orleans. That was pretty great. Mardi Gras was going on and got to kind of reunite with all the other NBA riders across the country. So that was really fun. Fully enjoyed that. And other cities, I really like Toronto. I really enjoyed Toronto. I know it's not an NBA city anymore, but in the preseason they went to Vancouver and I really wish the Vancouver Grizzlies still existed because that was amazing. So those were kind of my highlights so far.
You love Canada. Who knew that was going to happen?
I love Canada. Yeah. I've always loved Canada. I'm French Canadian, so maybe that's what it is, but
that'll do it. Anything else you'd like to expound upon before we let you go, if you want to speak your piece on anything?
No, just want all the listeners to know that that you were that I fully enjoyed you in college, and you were the same goofy guy I'm sure you are on this podcast, and I'm sure they're enjoying you. So it's been good to catch up a little bit.
Great to catch up. I will. I'm about to talk about how I blacked out going to the Utah Jazz game. So yes, nothing has changed.
Well, that's good to hear, man. I'm glad you're still having fun.
His name, Connor Letourneau, San Francisco Chronicle, at con_cron on Twitter. Connor, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Connor.
Thanks, man. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
There he goes, Connor Letourneau. Good friend of mine, friend of the pod now.
I think you can, yeah, he's good friends of all of us now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's my best friend.
Now, Gary, you really cozy up to our guests on here.
Yeah, most of them, except for that snake. Snake Whitaker. You know who you are. This guy I liked. He was like Dwight Schrute. It's all about the beat.
You really are the dunker of the three of us. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about this Warriors game, since we're on the subject of exciting one. I think a lot of people are saying, you know, if that Cavs-Wiz game was the first best game of the regular season, this might have been the second. I mean, it was pretty wild, even as it, you know, went down the stretch and it was a little bit disjointed on both ends, especially, you know, with the Warriors. They come back furiously, but then they're also, you know, when they're trying to actually win the game, they're missing shots, they're throwing balls away, not having any success stopping the Wizards. It was exciting, great environment. I mean, there were a lot of Warriors fans there, but just as, I mean, the Wizards fans, you could hear it from them, which, you know, wasn't the case last time Golden State showed up. So they get the win, 112-108. Good,
you know,
times.
Obviously, it sucks that there are a bunch of Warriors fans, a bunch of fans of other teams at these home games. But the thing about fans like that will go to see the Warriors in DC is they have no like real strong loyalty. So if you're playing well and winning, they're going to be on your side at the end. So I feel like if they can just play well enough, that's a thing that you can overcome, especially when they get started real hot like the Wizards did. Because those people just want to see cool basketball.
Yeah, a lot of times it seems like when the other team has a big fan presence, they don't even really get that hyped up for like the Warriors unless it's like Curry who scores. Mm-hmm. Or I'm sure if Durant had played the game, it would have been for him. But like, yeah, so they're easily swayed over to the light.
They're simple people with no real principles is what we're trying to say.
I think that's a spot on way to encapsulate those folks. The Wiz, obviously, they got off to a hot start. KD, he gets booed, you know, I guess during intros and when the game started. But then he leaves the game shortly after, as we discussed a little bit earlier. Gortat, he threw Zaza Pachulia on the ground. Durant tripped over him, kind of buckled his knee and left. And that was it for his time in D.C. I think he had like 75 people in the crowd, friends and family and such. So he was a non-factor.
Yeah, it was like one for every second he was able to play, unfortunately.
Just about. Only 2 minutes. But the Wizards, they took advantage. They scored 40 points in that first quarter. Bradley Beal, he couldn't miss at first, which was great. They got the lead at halftime. I mean, things were rolling. I mean, as in all NBA games, and you can't really, especially goes for the Warriors, they were going to come back. They were going to start hitting their shots, and eventually they did. They took the lead in the third, but the Wizards coming down the stretch. Markieff Morris, 10 big points. I was a little hard on him on Twitter for that rebound Curry snatched from him, but
that was tough to watch.
Yeah, but it was, you know, things looked good. Bench looked tight. Bogdanovich, he scores 16. New Wizard. Haven't talked about him since the All-Star break, so that was probably the first game that he was really hitting his stride. You also had Jan Mahimny playing as well as he has as a Wizard so far. He played it well again against the Raptors, but you know, had a lot of nice plays against the Warriors.
Yeah, that was the first game where he's shown any real glimpses of what we paid $64 million for.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't just play well, he played well in some ways that I think Gortat isn't necessarily going to give you, especially when you're playing like a smaller, faster team like that. He was able to switch out onto guys on the perimeter more, just much more athletic blocking shots, and
sometimes Gortat will just, you can see, he's just basically spinning in a circle in the paint. He can't get where he needs to get quick enough. So if Mahinmi can do that better, and that would be a big plus.
Yeah, that could be. I guess it might be frustrating for them, so maybe they wouldn't want to. But that seems like a rotation decision you could make game to game very easily. If Gortat's rolling and he's not hurting them on defense, let him play 30 minutes. And then if he's not doing too much on offense and Mahini's making some plays in there, give him, you know, more like 20 something and even it out a little bit.
Yeah, and Gortat is obviously like a sensitive guy, and has in the past not been a big fan of, you know, when he used to not play the fourth quarters, but that was when Chris Humphreys was taking his minutes. So hopefully, you know, if it's somebody that he sees as more of an equal, that won't be his, and if we're winning, then it won't be a problem.
Yeah, Mahinmi looked way more spry than, I mean, I just, I remember, you know, watching him a little bit last year because he did kind of come on with the Pacers, but like, just how spry and athletic he looked. And I mean, you're spot on, Dave. Gortat, a lot of times he just kind of spins around and he gets tons of rebounds. He's, you know, integral with the team in that respect. But I mean, Mahinmi pulled down to like a lot of tough rebounds, like, mm-hmm. you know, kind of running out and grabbing them, or just, you know, extending those giant arms and snatching them away from opposing players. So that's something you definitely don't get. And, you know, it's been a big problem for the Wiz. I hearken back to that game against the Cavs with Tristan Thompson. He would have been great, you know, this form of Jan.
And if we're going to keep giving up so many offensive rebounds, as we've been doing for most of the year, he's much better equipped to defend those second and third chances, just because he can, you know, jump a second time faster. He can turn around faster. So hopefully that'll be helpful.
The sequence last night, I think it was in the fourth, maybe the third, where he blocks the shot, offensive rebound, Morris blocks it, offensive rebound, right. Morris blocks it again. That was great to watch. They just had the ball just trapped under the basket. The guy had nowhere to go.
He plays well. Bojan Bogdanović, new Wizard, obtained over the All-Star break for a first rounder, the 2017 first rounder, Andrew Nicholson and Marcus Thornton. He puts his stamp on this game. He does it again against the Raptors, which we'll get to in just a minute. But the bench overall, if my math is correct, and it isn't normally, they scored 27 points, the bench, which is great. I mean, you know, I'll take 27 points any night. And they proved this evening, so we'll talk a little bit of Brandon Jennings later on, but this is a good sign, you know, against the best team, second best team in the NBA, tomatoes, tomatoes on that one, but it definitely enjoyed seeing that effort.
And they still have the best D in the league, right? Best defensive rating, the Warriors?
The Warriors, I think they are second slipped to the Spurs now.
So,
but know, they're right up there.
So scoring 27 from the bench on them, and just what did they get overall, 112? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Score 112. You should win games. Obviously, that wasn't quite the case this past weekend, but against the Warriors, it panned out.
What are your two thoughts on Bogdanović's nickname? I've heard people call him Bobo. I've heard Bo. Schwenk, I think I like what you said. You called him Bogo, and I like that.
I also, is Bogey one that has been thrown around?
Yeah, I haven't heard it spoken. I saw it on Twitter though.
I think that's what he likes to be called. That's like his preferred nickname, but I feel like these things, you know, they can change from team to team.
Right.
I saw, whenever his first day showing up, at practice, he was just kind of hanging out. The Wizards did a little video, and then when they're huddling up at the end, Otto is yelling Bobo from the back, just being a goofball. But I, you know, maybe that's catching on. It really depends on what the players start calling him, I guess.
I mean, his name is Bojan. Does he really need a nickname? I don't know. I think it's true. Like Gortat. Like you can just call him by his name, and it's kind of its own thing.
I just need something to cheer in the moment, though. Bojan's kind of hard to yell unless you say it like Booyah.
There you go. Just call him Booyah.
I was tweeting during the game, like, Bobo, which I acknowledge on Twitter. I'm like such a boorish idiot, like just tweeting out what I'm yelling from my couch like I'm at the game. It's
just connecting with the people.
Yeah. Touching the people without actually touching the people.
Well, I'll get you in trouble.
So. Don't go touching people.
One other note from this Warriors game. The starters, they kind of look tired at the end, especially John. Otto kind of helped him out there at the end. He grabbed that rebound and got fouled and hit those free throws that, you know, pretty much put him over the edge. But glad to see they were able to sew it up. And then, you know, the Wizards kind of garbage and back to back. So I was really concerned seeing that. I mean, they were able to get the win against the Warriors, but it had me worried against the Raptors. And I guess that those concerns were unfounded because they beat the Raptors in a back to back on the road, 105-96.
It was really foolish of you to have those concerns.
I apologize deeply. Profusely.
This game, we watched this one together. And when they got up like 20 right away or something, I said something along the lines of, man, it'd be nice if they just crushed them. And then it immediately tightened up. And I was like, oh, I wish I hadn't said that. And then they opened it up again, and it was really fun to watch.
The bench opened it up again.
Yeah.
Yes. Which was surprising. Oh, excuse me.
What was that?
Autoplay videos.
Oh, son of a.
Yeah, I mean, that was the big story from this game here. The bench took control. You had Boyan. He popped 27 points. He was 6-for-7 from three. Just a great evening for him. He had Jason Smith score 8 points. He had a stretch. He was 4-for-4 from the field. He was on fire for that stretch of time. You know, even Satoransky was in there. He was playing good defense. Jan was pulling some rebounds down. Kelly, he hit a three, you know, playing good defense. I mean, just, hey, look what we have. We have a bench all of a sudden.
Boyan was, he was very good against the Warriors. He was pretty good against the Jazz, but he was incredible tonight. And I don't know if you guys watched a lot of him on the Nets. I hope that you didn't do that.
No.
But he's got so much more game than I thought he could, or than I thought he did. He can put it on the floor better. He's been kind of sloppy with the passes, but hopefully that's just because he doesn't really know the system yet. But he is a willing passer. He's just so much better than anybody on the bench, really, offensively. It's been great.
Yeah, most of my exposure to him was in the Olympics, where he did look good. I think he led the Olympics in scoring, which I didn't know at the time. That's a fact that was unearthed when the Wizards got him. But I definitely thought he looked good then. But yeah, I didn't know he was such a dynamic scorer. I did think he had a little more handle than he does, though. He seems a little shaky.
I just assumed he was going to be pretty much just a spot-up shooter, really. So I'll take anything.
Totally. Handle a little shaky, but he's just so big that, I mean, he really, like, rumbles through people. And it was great to see, you know, Otto was off tonight, and no big deal. Just plug in Boyan, and they were good to go. And it was great. He played really well with Beal and Wall, so can't ask for much more than that. I mean, a lot of people were, I mean, Lou Williams was kind of the target pre-trade deadline for the Wizards, and a lot of people voiced their concerns that he might not be able to play with Wall and Beal, that he is really a solo kind of guy. So the fact that they've got this guy that they can, you know, plug in at the two or the three, essentially, and really be instant offense and play with the starters as well, working out well so far.
Speaking of instant offense, and I think Brooks had a little trouble. He essentially yanked him out of the rotation for a couple games, but the 9 minutes that Jason Smith played tonight were perfect. Just came in, hit some jumpers. I think he had a block or two, some tough rebounds. So if they can balance the minutes between those two guys, you know, get Mahinmi some play, that'll be perfect.
Saw Ochefu get some run at the end of this game. They were smoking him so bad. I guess the Raptors, it wasn't like close at then, but they pulled it to 9.
Right.
I think the Wiz had like an 18-point lead or something, pretty much threw in the towel there with about 2 minutes left. But Ochefu, McCullough, also new Wizard on board here. I didn't realize that he'd be playing at all, but I guess he scored a point too. Hey, look at that. So a nice night, and really all we've been hoping for. You know, Bradley Beal and John Wall, they don't need to play extraordinary, although they had nice games. It feels good. And I mean, those guys, they sat on the bench for half the second quarter, when was the last time that happened?
Yeah.
Probably against the Nets in January or something.
And it's, you know, still a little much, but Wall 34 minutes, Beal 32. Gortat only played 18. Otto got some rest. That's going to be really important, you know, with all these road games coming up, just a lot of games, period. They can stop playing those guys 38 minutes a game or whatever.
We got to hit this twice.
Five to win and nobody beats me. Five to win and nobody beats me.
Nobody beats the Wiz, but my soundboard skills, they're certainly beatable. All right. So two wins in a row after a bit of a sloppy start to get back into the groove post All-Star game. We can touch on these games very, very, very briefly here. Last Friday, I actually didn't get a chance to watch this one. So Wiz lose at Philly 120-112. No Embiid for Philadelphia. Unfortunately, it sounds like he is done for the season. The Wiz played well. I mean, they score 112 points, enough to beat the Warriors, not enough to beat the Sixers when you play terrible defense. So, they hadn't lost a dumb one in a long time. So they were definitely overdue for it. Not a big deal there.
Yeah, I felt the same way. And coming out of the All-Star break, those are trap games.
Yeah, I think the only reason it would have been significant is if it caused them to go into a slide, which it looked like they were in danger of doing because they came out pretty uninspired against the Jazz too. But if it's behind them, it really doesn't matter at all.
No big deal there. So then they come home. They play Utah on Sunday. They lose that one, 102-92. This one a little bit more. I mean, this one also kind of understandable. Utah is pretty good. I knew that they were good, and you know they're in the playoff picture in the West. But Dave, you and I and some friends, we got some drinks before the game. Before we get to that game, this is way more important. Why were all the bars closed in and around Chinatown? We went at like 3 o'clock on Sunday, 2 hours before tip. Iron Horse closed. Jackpot closed, Rocket Bar closed. We tried to go to a new bar, Free State Atlantic Bar closed.
Was it a holy day or something? Today was Ash Wednesday.
I don't know, man. We settled at RFD, which was great. But I was very perplexed. We were hightailing it all over the place.
If Rocket Bar was celebrating a holy day, I would be even more perplexed by that. But yeah, I don't know. None of them open till 4. There's a game on. You would think you're missing out on a lot of money by not opening up at noon or something, but
yeah. And we grabbed a table at RFD, and people pretty well packed the place. I mean, it was probably due to the fact that there weren't any other places open. They're not paying us to say this, but I'll personally endorse it. $15 IPA buckets on Saturday, all day. Or I'm sorry, Sunday. They got me plenty drunk and didn't retain much of the game because of it.
And if you tell them that Zardcast sent you, they'll put ice in those buckets for you.
Didn't realize that till the third bucket. Had to cite my own podcast, but no big deal. But yeah, when we were there, we were chatting. I guess I didn't really realize how good and kind of deep the Jazz are. And they made the Wizards pay for it. They killed them all on the boards. Rudy Gobert had a nice night. And Gordon Hayward, handsome, deadly as well. So that's kind of all she wrote there. No big deal for that one either.
Yeah, I mean, the Jazz are just really, really good. Because they're this good, and they haven't even been healthy all year. So
they are super deep. Yeah.
So, I mean, that puts them at, I mean, with the Warriors win, they go 7-3 in February. That's great. It's crazy to think, I mean, you win that Philly game. I mean, obviously, that's a tough one. Cleveland in overtime, that crazy LeBron shot doesn't go in. I mean, they're at a near-perfect February. That's nuts.
Was that Pistons game in February, or was that end of January?
End of January.
Yeah. They lost 4 games in January. Okay. Moving right along here. I guess we can comment a little bit more on the bench and the moves that have gone down since we last spoke. We've talked about Boyan pretty extensively. Ernie Grunfeld kind of atoning for botching the bench over the summer, which, you know, subject to a lot of debate whether, you know, how badly he botched it and how good of a cleanup job this was. I mean, it's pretty up in the air. I think I've kind of come full circle on this thing and I've decided that NBA benches are pretty fluid as it is. I mean, look at what the Cavs are doing right now, the Warriors. You know, it's rare that you're always going to be happy with. If you're lucky enough to have five guys that you're happy with, it's rare you're going to be happy with the five guys behind them. So, like the move, they got Chris McCullough as kind of their draft pick, quote unquote. They got rid of the Nicholson contract and got rid of Marcus Thornton. Not the worst. Not the worst. Ernie doesn't like draft picks, but whatever. How do you guys feel about it?
The move, I kind of had to talk myself into it, but now having seen Booyah play a couple times, I'm pretty much on board with it. And then I like the Jennings pickup a lot.
So he clears waivers today. Wizards sign him. I guess they sign him to a minimum. That's how that works, sort of thing. I don't know how much money they have to give him. I have no idea. But
I think he gets paid from the Wizards. I think he gets paid a prorated veteran minimum, and then the Knicks pay him what they already owed him.
Gotcha.
Sweet deal for him.
Yeah.
Gets off a crappy team, gets his full payout plus some.
Totally. And the Wiz, they pretty much fill both needs that they were looking for. They needed a backup point guard, and they needed scoring, and they got a little more size with Bogdanović. So that pretty much fills all those gaps that they were looking for. Brandon Jennings was a pretty good spark plug off the bench for the Knicks. You know, the Knicks are dreadful, but I'm trying to pull up his stats here, but I know he was at least averaging 4 assists a game, has the most assists from any backup player in the league. Is that what I heard?
Yeah. What do you think that, so tonight we saw the bench get an extended run. Do you think Jennings kind of just pushes Sato out of that?
So what was the lineup they had out there?
They were running, at one point it was, what were they doing? Satoransky, Oubre, Bogdanović, Smith, and Mahini.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he takes Satoransky's minutes. Although, I mean, I think depending on matchups, and that's the nice thing about Bogdanović and Oubre is that they're kind of interchangeable. You can play them on the wing, and they can also rebound fairly well. So if one of them isn't playing well, like Oubre has not played well recently, you could just take him out and run Jennings with Satoransky. I don't know if they'd be able to shoot well enough, but yeah, maybe Satoransky just won't play very much anymore.
I think that seems like the most likely outcome now. He has not really been doing much lately, unfortunately, because earlier in the season there were times he looked real good.
He plays pretty good defense, and I think that's where he'll be useful. Brandon Jennings doesn't play any defense, or hasn't been this year, from what our buddy Stewart from Long Island has been telling me about him. So, you know, if that's the issue, if they're finding scoring from, you know, if Oubre's hitting threes, and so is Bogdanović, and, you know, Brandon Jennings is a liability out there, swap in Sato and, you know, give him a couple minutes, and that's about all he can do. I mean, he can handle the ball and distribute a little bit, but you know, and even if they need to go small, you know, Satoransky can bring the ball up. He can try and find Jennings, and I think that all it just gives him more options, things that they didn't have before.
Yeah, because I think the worst situations the bench ever got in when they were blowing leads, it was, I mean, their defense has never been good, but it gets really dire when they will just go 5 minutes without scoring at all, because they're with Trey Burke in there, the ball doesn't move. There's a lot of turnovers. There's just no real plan on offense, and Jennings is at least competent enough to not let that happen.
Yeah, he could play off ball too. I think a lot of whenever him and Rose shared the court, it looked like he was playing the two usually when I would watch.
Well, he can't shoot at all, so I don't know.
I don't think Rose can either, though. Yeah, so yeah.
Well, nice pickup, and then just to kind of round it out to you know, this is a new look unit. You know, we've talked about it already, but Jan Mahimny, he's stepping into his own. So this is a completely new look bench, which is, you know, borderline shocking to me. I mean, considering where this team was, I mean, it was non-existent essentially. So
yeah, I mean,
turn around
from early on in the season, Oubre was our sixth man, sixth best player on the team, and now he's probably going to be the 10th going forward, pretty much everybody on the bench, which is speaks, you know, I mean, obviously he hasn't been playing as well recently, but even more, it's just that got better players at every position. It's exciting.
Yeah. And couldn't come at a better time with the schedule and the way it shakes out over these last 22 games or so. Okay, let's, Julie, before we get into the rest of the Eastern Conference, just glancing at it, let's take a look ahead at that schedule. So the next, I think I calculated out today. So I think the final 22 games, 14 of those are on the road. So that, you know, that's a lot. These next couple that we're, you know, really getting into it right here. I mean, with the Golden State game, it's starting to get hairy. So they win at Toronto tonight. So they play Toronto Friday in the phone booth. They got Orlando on Sunday in the phone booth. But then they go on a five-game road swing. They got Phoenix and Denver next Tuesday and Wednesday. I guess as far as we'll project out. But, you know, Sacramento and Portland to close that one out Friday and Saturday. I mean, just a ton of games in a very short amount of time. Excuse me, Portland and Minnesota close that out.
It's tough, a five-game road trip at all, and then that four of them are back-to-backs. But if you had to pick five teams, those are pretty close to the ones you would pick.
That's certainly true. I mean, all these teams are. I mean, Denver, a little bit frisky, but Phoenix, terrible. Sacramento, terrible. Minnesota, terrible.
And all these teams are jockeying for lottery balls, so it's not like they're going to get better.
What say you guys about these next four? So Toronto, Orlando, at Phoenix, at Denver. I'm going to give them 3-1 there.
I like 3-1 as well.
I crunched the numbers and it's going to be 4-0.
So scientific, Dave,
mm-hmm.
as always.
How is the internship going at 538?
Can we talk about this?
It's pretty good. I learned how to use the calculator the other day. I'm learning. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with this application. It's called Excel, and it's like big charts, and you put lots of numbers in there, and then you can really do almost anything. You can add them. You can divide them. So it's pretty exciting stuff. I met Nate Silver the other day. He seemed pretty impressed that I was learning that so quickly.
Was it a regular calculator or like a TI-83?
It was a TI-84.
Whoa!
Yeah, which I didn't even know they made. So
it must be limited edition or something. It stinks that you couldn't go, but I appreciate your dedication to the podcast and you not going to the Sloan conference. I know you had the invite, so.
Yeah, I'm kind of relieved they wanted me to speak. I don't know what they wanted me to talk about. I was just going to get up there and show them how the calculator works, but beyond that, I didn't really have anything planned, so.
You could have showed them some cool games, like what was the Fall Down and Drug Wars. Did you guys have those on your calculator?
Yeah, I got a cool baseball one, so that has cut into my productivity a lot. I figured that out second half of the first day. And
I was a big Phoenix guy.
Ooh, Phoenix. Phoenix is great. That will probably be what I'll do tomorrow.
Really hitting it hard over there. Let's take a look at the rest of the Eastern Conference here. That would also require me to have the standings up in front of me. Okay. So tonight, Boston beat Cleveland. We had it up while we were talking to Connor. So the Celts, three games back of the Cavs for the one seed. Celts in the two slot. The Wiz back in the three. They are now two games back of the Celtics. The Raptors in the four, a game back of the Wizards. Hawks at the five, they're a game and a half back of the four. And then you kind of hit. So basically, after you get to that five seed, I mean, there's a big drop off. You got Indiana at the six, Chicago at the seven, and Detroit at the eight. Miami, though, trying to crack in. Scrappy Miami. Who saw that coming? So, yeah, you know, it's going to be a battle to the end. I think the Wiz, with these road games coming up, I mean, I think they can hopefully win a majority of them. But if they keep it right around 500, you know, they got a pretty, you know, you can kind of maintain status quo. And then that last little stretch into April to close the season isn't the worst. A lot of Eastern Conference foes. So, you know, you keep it right around 500 and then you use that last little area to maybe try and pick up some ground and solidify the seed that they'd like. So,
and if we can beat the Raptors again on Friday, that'll give us a two-game cushion now and the tiebreaker, which would be great.
Big one on Friday.
With Lowry out, I think, you know, basically, what do they just have to have a better record than Toronto the rest of the way and Atlanta, who they already have a 2.5-game cushion on, and play at least once more. They just have better records than them the rest of the way to keep that three seed.
Yeah, and we do have the tiebreaker with Atlanta as well.
Because, you know, just trying to avoid the second round Cleveland matchup. But whether they're the... It'd be really sweet to catch Boston and get the two, but that doesn't really matter all that much. If you're playing Pacers or the Bulls...
Right.
I have around the same amount of confidence in either one. I guess more for the Bulls, but not worried about the Pacers.
Yeah. It would be... I mean, we got to go through Cleveland anyways. Might as well just get it done in the second round.
Oh, Dave. All right, gents. Perfect timing. Look, the song's falling out. Great.
That's why you're the pod god.
He's conducting for the listener.
They call me Maestro T. All right. This week in John Wall time?
Me, watch you, John Wall.
John Wall.
John Wall. John Wall.
John was just a boy.
John Wall.
John Wall.
John Wall, the Washington Wizard.
A spectacular circuit shot by John Wall.
Everybody do it, John Wall. Do it, John Wall.
So John, he matches his career high in assists against the Warriors with 19 of them. And since they've come back from the All-Star break, 14 assists against the 76ers, 11 against the Jazz, 19 against the Warriors, and 13 against the Raptors. That's pretty good, I'd say.
I think he's trolling me. I said in our preseason pod how much I wanted him to have a 20-assist game this season. And then I think I've brought it up multiple times since then. He's gone and gotten 19 twice. I think he's just screwing with me at this point.
He's got 19 twice. He got 18 back at the beginning of January. Yeah, he's been close. He's got a couple 15ers, 116 in there. So
I think he'll get there. His shot has been not falling at all for the last month or so here, but his assist numbers have gone through the roof over that period. I think he might be able to catch Harden for the league leader, which would be cool.
Yeah, he's got double-digit assists in every game. Yeah, every game going back to their win over New Orleans on the 29th of January.
And I think he's almost up at 11 per game for the year now, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, he's at 10.8 right now. He averaged 13.2 in February, so.
13 tonight, keeping it going.
Mm-hmm. Good times. Keep it up, John. Hopefully, Brandon Jennings will help spell him a little bit as well. Keep those minutes down.
Did you two watch him in the skills contest?
Oh, yeah.
Missed him. He was out in a flash.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. I didn't get to a TV until a three-point contest.
He seemed to have other priorities or was just not at all interested in...
competing in anything.
He
in
was
All-Star Weekend.
Courtside with his shades on, like minutes after elimination. Yeah, he was just there to have some fun. And who can blame him?
Certainly not I. All right, gentlemen. I think that brings us to the bitter end here. Let's take it away from basketball. Do a little pop culture detour.
Pop, pop, pop culture detour.
And I think we have a consensus on what we want to discuss.
Missing Richard Simmons.
I haven't listened to it yet. I'm saving it for my plane trip to Japan.
It's so. Real good. I listened to like 2.5 today.
I'm excited for it. Did they find him?
Not yet.
Wait, what is missing Richard Simmons?
So you know Richard Simmons, the workout guy, the like real flamboyant curly hair fella?
Yeah.
He, I guess, just like ghosted everybody, his friends, family, clients, everyone, and hasn't been seen since 2014. But he's like...
Hasn't been seen? Like
publicly. Like, it's confirmed that he's alive, I guess, by, like, his maid, and that's about it. But, yeah, he people that he saw every day and spoke to every day and were, like, his closest people, he just bailed on. And so one of his friends, who's, I guess, also some kind of, you know, storyteller or producer or whatever, is doing a podcast on trying to figure out why and get him to... speak or something.
That seems kind of rude.
Yeah, what if he wants to be left alone?
Yeah, I don't know. They tackle that too, though. It's good. It's like Serial-esque, but then obviously much more like lighthearted because it's just about where's this guy. It's not about who killed some girl.
Not yet. It's not.
But no. What were you talking about, Schwenk? What was this consensus of which you spoke?
Well, I think we're all up to speed, I guess. Through three episodes on Legion on FX. Very, very good stuff. X-Men spinoff.
I didn't know that.
I think that's why there's the X and the O on the Legion.
It's definitely a Marvel property.
Right.
I had no idea.
I think he's like a deep cut character.
Right. I want to say, this is totally baseless speculation, but I want to say he might be like the weird unknown offspring of Charles Xavier. That's my I don't know I haven't read anything about it or like you know where it comes from in the comics, but that, I think that's just my stab at it.
I read a ton of X-Men when I was growing up, like all of them, but none of like the offshoots. I didn't mess with any of the side streams, so I don't know at all.
That really totally colors my perception of the whole show. I didn't realize that is what it was.
That's they have the one line where the dude's like, this is true. He might be the most powerful mutant we've discovered yet.
I just thought it was like
a slur.
That is interesting.
It's been good though. I mean, it's been trippy. So it's about a telepath or I think that's what they call him, telepath, and kind of go in and out of his memories, what he's seen and feeling. You know, in the meantime, he starts in like a mental institution and trying to figure out what's up with him. And a lot of it at the beginning, you know, you're trying to figure out what is actually going on. What's a memory. So it's
right. See it's who's reliable or not. During the second episode, I think I was watching when it's really going a lot of like what's real, what's not real. I was having really intense deja vu while watching that. And it was messing with me. I was uncomfortable for a little bit while that was happening.
You gotta stop doing mushrooms, Gary. You know what is really disorienting for me when I watch the show is that, as you guys know, my name is also David, the name of the main character. And very frequently throughout the show, there are scenes where there's someone just going, David, David, wake up. Yeah. And it's like really off-putting for me to watch it.
Good stuff, though. Would definitely recommend it. Bunch of people from Fargo are in it, which is great. Fargo coming back in April. Very excited for that. Good stuff. That's all I got for. That's the only thing I got to recommend.
Definitely watch Planet Earth.
Mm.
If you haven't, on BBC America. Is that a channel that is like widely available, or is that like a niche channel?
I think if you have like the second level of cable, you probably get it. You don't need like deluxe every channel, but I think you might need like Notch 2.
Well, it's on there. It's on Saturdays. Give it a watch. It'll make you feel like a real bum for spending all your time in your house, but that passes pretty quickly.
The Komodo dragon fight at the start of the first episode is phenomenal.
They were so gross, though.
They
all
are
that
gross.
Crap coming out of their mouth. And
I think, you know, it'd be unrealistic to expect me to see all those animals in real life. So staying in my house and watching the TV is how I can do it.
That's true. It's
makes
just
a lot of sense.
It's just really a shame that there's so much wonder in the world, and we're really just too lazy to go experience it.
You're like the dude from American Beauty. That's what that sounded like.
Well,
sometimes the world's so beautiful I can barely stand it.
Well, I know for a fact, like when I see something on that I'm like, oh my god, this is majestic. I have to go see this. And I'm sure after 10 seconds of seeing it in real life, I would be like, well, shit, now I'm just in the woods now.
Well, you guys, I'm going to go out into the world and experience some nature, and I'll try and bring it back to the pod.
All right. Can we save that nature for when we do it at your place again?
Yeah. That's fine.
Bring any animals in my apartment.
So, yeah, next week I won't be around. You guys got any more pop culture stuff? We can wind it down here.
No, I say wind it down. Hand us the reins. We'll try not to break your computer.
Thanks. Well, I'm going to leave I'm taking the computer with me, but don't break the other stuff.
We don't need the computer?
You will need a computer.
I can bring my laptop.
Yeah, just literally, and I'll show you once we settle down here, just taking the recorder, putting that file in the computer, and then sending it to me. So we'll be doing some time travel. I'll be a day ahead. You guys are sending the pod into the future, and then I'm going to post it so it shows up in the past.
That sounds right. That, you know, when we take over, we start doing time travel.
You said you had some good ideas. They've been percolating, so I'm excited to listen. See what you guys come up with.
I had good ideas in the first like hour and then didn't think about it anymore, probably. But we'll try to spark some more.
It'll be very organic.
All right. I can't wait. I'm sure the listeners are excited too. We'll get out of here on that. Keep an eye out next week. Whenever we hammer it down, we can tweet out when the pod should be expected. But until then, give us a follow at Zardcast, subscribe, all that jazz. Thanks again to Connor Letourneau for talking Warriors, a little bit of Wiz with us. And I will see you all in 2 weeks for my co-hosts, Gary Jones, David Keffer. I'm CT Schwenk. That was Zardcast.
Amen. Amen.